Welcome back, folks. Wednesdays in the 11 o'clock hour, we always visit with Michael Heck from Greater New Orleans, Inc., and he has decided to abandon us with our heat and go to the cooler temperatures of Northern Europe. But it's okay, because Matt Wolf is left here to pick up the pieces, VP of Communications of Greater New Orleans, Inc. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. And look, I'm going to say, very smart of him. I actually just left training camp, and I've got to tip my hat to the players who are practicing in this weather, because I think they'd rather be where Michael is right now.
There is no doubt. I was just talking about that. I don't know how the guys do it, and I say this all the time. If you can practice in this heat and this humidity level in this town, you can play football anywhere. So,
oh, absolutely. You know, you're being pushed to the limits. And I'm going to give it to Rouse's. I don't know if I'm allowed to pitch a company while I'm on here, but they've got a portable freezer section in the end zone, and the players go in there to cool off between drills. I can't make this up.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And you see them, they get kind of caught, because, I mean, these are big guys and they're wearing pads. Yeah. So some are coming out while some are trying to go in, and, you know, they don't fit like, you know, normal people try to fit. So
No. And they're probably all hoping for rain, right? So they're doing a little bit of a rain dance out there so they could maybe go inside and practice, for sure. A lot going on, Matt, around the city. You guys had a three-year update relative to NOLA Coalition, and I say this often, and I know you've heard me say it before. I've really enjoyed that segment of our show and our offering here, getting to know difference makers in the community, people down in the trenches, all those cliches, right? But they're all so true. You know, backfilling on a number of different services that government just can't afford. There's not enough assets or resources to do so. And it's good to have a vibrant, healthy, not-for-profit community. And you guys have had a lot of successes, and it continues to grow. Every time I look at the numbers, I'm shocked at how many folks have come together.
It's really remarkable. And you know, I've got to give credit to Richard Cortez's, our former board chair, who really dreamed this up with Michael during an elevator ride. I think sometimes when we're doing the work, you forget how meaningful it is until you have an event like we had last week, where, you know, we had retired judges on stage speaking about how, you know, they never would have imagined that this many organizations would come together united for one goal. You know, to have Superintendent Kirkpatrick talk about, you know, not, you know, the support that she's had from the business community, but also just, you know, how she's been given the ability to lead the way that she needs to lead. And I know that that was something that was very important to the coalition. And, you know, what we do today is we look at a New Orleans 3 years later that just looks and feels different than it did at that time. The numbers are astounding. You know, when you see an overall violent crime rate decrease of 67%, that is unbelievable. I mean, that I can't even believe that that's what our current reality is right now. And it's because of everyone kind of dropping their agendas and just recognizing we just need to have a better New Orleans, and it's working.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I was thinking about this over the weekend. What could we achieve if we were really clicking on all cylinders in the criminal justice system? I mean, we, you know, there was an article in the paper yesterday about a workaround as a result of a lot of data brought forward by the Metropolitan Crime Commission on the efficiency and effectiveness of judges managing their dockets. Now we have two temporary judges filling, you know, the seat of Daryl Durbigny, trying to get that docket brought up to the average of the court. And, you know, when you read stories like that and you see the successes that we've had, you wonder, you know, how big is that delta, and how much more could we accomplish in the near future?
Well, I think you're addressing something that is really important, which is there is an entire criminal justice system. It doesn't start and stop with NOPD. They're just the most visible piece and probably the most effective in actually stopping the crime happening on the spot. But you're right, and I think that's why, you know, the coalition still exists, why there are still goals, why there are still initiatives that the group wants to carry out, you know, here in 2025. Number three on the public safety goals for the year is to drive accountability across the entire criminal justice system, from arrest to conviction. And I think that speaks, you know, really profoundly to what you're saying, because you're right, it doesn't stop at handcuffs. There's just a lot of other pieces and parts to the system, and it's complicated, and there's a lot of work and attention that needs to go into making sure it runs as smoothly and efficiently as possible.
What do you see as one of, if you had the top three issues, and I'm sure y'all do, in discussing that moving forward? You know, you can't just sit around and celebrate your successes. You got to continue to move forward and continue to attack other frailties in the delivery of services. What do y'all see as the top three issues for NOLA Coalition?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, number one is we've got to push for, you know, more impactful recruitment and retention of the NOPD. You know, it's amazing to think that our crime has dropped that much, despite the fact that they're still extremely shorthanded. And so, you know, I think that what we're talking through is how they can do, you know, get more officers on the ground in an effective manner. I think, you know, secondly was that accountability across the entire criminal justice system. And then last is, you know, this is the piece that's really kind of, you know, for us it's not forgotten, but I think for many people it's forgotten, and that's just continuing our work to support youth service organizations. You know, we haven't quite reached our $15 million goal. We're a little over $11 million. But, you know, to see, as you just mentioned, all of these organizations that are putting in really significant and impactful work in the communities of New Orleans, but they could be doing so much more if they had more resources and more funding. You know, knowing that we can stop crime before it happens, because we're providing the children of New Orleans with the opportunities to learn, you know, how to, you know, and find a meaningful career, how to function here in New Orleans effectively. You know, those are programs that we need to have invest more into. And so I think that's probably the, you know, one of the biggest things that's important to us, the third one.
Absolutely. Let's talk about jobs real quick. The Louisiana economy has been showing some momentum. Tell us about where we stand.
Yeah, well, we just hit, really, for the second time in the state's history, we surpassed 2 million non-farm jobs, which actually one of my coworkers was asking me about non-farm jobs. It's a classification within you know, the national databases. But I think what this really demonstrates is that the companies in Louisiana feel comfortable about what doing business in Louisiana feels like today. And that's not to say that they weren't comfortable before, but I, you know, when we look at the changes that have taken place at the state from a public policy standpoint, but also the support that, you know, they're receiving in a greater way from organizations like Louisiana Economic Development, I think you've just got companies that feel like their chances of success are higher today than they were before. And the biggest way to demonstrate that is for them to hire more people. And so now we have more Louisianians being employed in great industries like healthcare and manufacturing, which, you know, were the two top performing sectors that made it that $2 million milestone possible.
Yeah. And we're doing this, what's really kind of interesting, because we're going to be visiting with demographer Greg Rigamer. I was reading an article in the San Francisco Chronicle of certain jurisdictions in the greater San Francisco area that are getting a lot older and what the implications of that are. Our out-migration has been greater than our in-migration, and actually there was a recent article in City Business about the number of people that are moving. I think we've lost 40,000 just here in the greater New Orleans area since 2020, maybe, or somewhere right around there, 2019. This is hard to achieve with these headwinds, right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, and I mean, it all starts with a job, though. I mean, ultimately, you know, people are going to stay when they feel comfortable about not only their current job, but what their prospects for potentially second, third jobs will be, because it's all about a career. And so when we've got companies feeling comfortable about their place here, it means that the people that work for them are also going to feel comfortable about being here as well. And that's how you undo this.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, breaking news. I don't know if you want to comment on this. Gilbert Montano has just announced that he is going to be leaving the Cantrell administration here shortly.
Interesting. Well, you know, look, you know, I think this is part of the natural ebb and flow of the political cycle. You know, I would imagine he may be one of the first, but wouldn't be one of the last. I know that her administration is winding down, and I think it's natural in that type of role to kind of, you know, find your next gig before you maybe have to. So, you know, Gilbert's been, you know, a pleasure to work with over the years. I know that, you know, our teams got to really coalesce a lot over the past year working ahead of the Super Bowl. And, you know, I think he's done, you know, a tremendous service for the city.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that he's been even at odds with his own administration sometimes on decisions being made. There was an observation that he made. He said he didn't expect the severity of the city's historical governance challenges were, you know, the level of shoddy infrastructure, racial tension, and friction with state government, to name a few. A couple of those are kind of interesting to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I haven't spent as much time in City Hall as obviously he has. It's a very complicated place, and there are a lot of forces that are at play there. And I think you have to have a thick skin to work in a city administration. You probably have to have a little bit of a thicker skin in one like is in power today that, you know, is under a lot of scrutiny. So, you know, I think that what he's been able to do is, you know, weather the storm pretty well. And to your point, and not always necessarily agreeing with his boss at all times, I think he played his role as a public servant in a really meaningful and powerful way. And he should be an example of what we want to have in that facility.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's many times that position is a kind of a thankless job in many respects, having served in that position before, but not in a city, but, you know, for our sheriff's organization. There are a lot of conflicts that you face each and every day, for sure. Let's talk about the River District. A lot of things going on there. Some parts of it are being retuned, re-engineered. Others continue to move forward. Tell us, give us kind of the state of the River District.
Yeah, well, you know, before we get into the details, I just, you know, want to remind everyone, you know, this is a project that's taken years to really start getting off the ground. And I think that when you've got a development that's mixed use, like the River District is, there's so many pieces and parts and players that are involved, that in that time, it's natural that elements of it are going to shift and change just as market conditions fluctuate, and as, you know, even the capacity of those partners that may be involved in it, you know, their status may change themselves. So, you know, I think that when we look at the River District today, it's still, you know, one of the most exciting developments in the history of our city. You know, they are, you know, utilizing the term mixed use in a really meaningful way. Of course, they're going to be the home of one of our region's most valuable companies in Shell. But, you know, what I love that they're announcing lately, you know, they just released some designs for the first phase of housing that's going to be built in the River District. And, you know, their promise for this to be affordable housing thus far is coming to light in a meaningful way. They're this first 220 units, 165 of them are going to be set aside for renters who qualify for affordable housing. you know, their full vision is for 900 units, but to know that, you know, right now they're delivering on that promise is really refreshing to hear, and it means that River District is going to be what they promised for us. You know, similarly on the more, you know, entertainment side, and I know I had this later on, but I guess we can just mention while we're talking about River District, is, you know, the new music museum, Louisiana Experience. I mean, that is... This is a facility that's going to rival the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. And, you know, again, there's a big journey that goes from taking a vision into reality. And, you know, I know that Chris Berry and his team have worked diligently to raise funds there. I know that they were able to secure some funding during the legislative session that's going to help bring that project to life. And that also will be the catalyst for them to raise the remaining dollars that have to be raised. This project's going to create 200 jobs, and it's going to, you know, bring $150 million in economic activity for the city and state. It's a really big deal, and music is just such an important part of our culture and a part of our lifeblood. It's going to be great to have, you know, again, just really different pieces of this development that are, you know, going to put people to work, that are going to house people, that are going to give people a good time. It's what that area deserves right along the riverfront.
Matt, where is that going to be located exactly? Do you know?
I don't know exactly on the property footprint where it exactly sits. I'm gonna have to do some homework there, but we can get.
Yeah, I'm
answer.
Excited about it. That's why I asked. I mean, I think it's long overdue. To have that here, we're certainly worthy of having it. For sure, right? Because of the influence that we've had in music in general for a long, long time. I was just kind of curious where it might end up being on the footprint.
I think it's more on the, like, downtown side, on the lake side of Chabatulas. I believe that's where on the footprint it is.
Breeze Airways announces some new nonstop flights to some interesting destinations. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, you know, Breeze has been just a really incredible partner for New Orleans. You know, they're opening up, you know, these routes to cities that just, you know, aren't being serviced by the larger airlines. And I think what's really great about them announcing these new destinations is that the industry as a whole is bracing themselves for a softening demand in global travel. So, you know, signs, you know, that, you know, these people read the tea leaves on are essentially saying to brace themselves for a slower travel year overall. But we're not seeing that here in New Orleans. You know, last year we had, you know, 19 million visitors, which, you know, pretty much came almost to the record that we've ever had. You know, it was a 6% growth. Upward trend shows no sign of slowing down. You know, all the numbers that we're seeing, obviously we had some, you know, pretty big events here in New Orleans over the past year, is just showing that the demand is continuing. Obviously recently, I think Michael talked about it a little bit last week, you know, even airport officials are figuring out what that means for the terminal, or, you know, as they're now saying, what would be a second terminal. You know, this is a destination that people want to be, and I think a lot of it is because of the work that's been going on here. But, you know, the ultimate test is that the airlines match what that demand looks like, and Breeze is really seeing it and capturing it, and they'll be delivering.
Got a text here that says, just flew Breeze round trip to Tampa. Great experience, which is good to hear. Obviously, more opportunities, more options for us here. Sometimes, you know, for a long while, it was hard to get a direct flight to a lot of different destinations out of this airport, but that obviously is changing. Folks, we're going to be right back after the break. We're visiting with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications for Greater New Orleans, Inc. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We've been visiting with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications for Greater New Orleans, Inc. And, Matt, we have a special guest.
We do, absolutely. We are thrilled to welcome Sonny LaBeouf from Cox today.
Sonny, welcome to the show. She's the Market Vice President of Cox New Orleans, and welcome.
Thank you so very much. So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Sonny, we I understand that there's a collaborative effort between Cox and Delgado Community College, which I think the world of, and the job that they're doing, about a business leadership academy. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. We are thrilled to partner with Delgado again this year in hosting our sixth annual Small Business Leadership Academy, which is designed to support small businesses in our community, designed to help them scale their businesses, grow their businesses, and learn how to really be successful in maximizing their potential.
So, 6-year anniversary, what was the motivation in year one, and what has changed over this 6-year experience with this collaborative effort with Delgado?
So the vision guiding our partnership has always been around scaling opportunity for small business owners. What started as a small pilot, which was referred to as the Small Business Growth Academy, has now scaled, in fact, and we have found new innovative ways to share information with participants, including during COVID, where we had hybrid offerings, like many others, adjusting and being agile, but making sure we're really meeting the needs of small business owners here in this community in particular, because what we want to do is make sure that we're investing in their success. Ultimately, we want to assist with supporting economic development, and we also want the participants in our program to really benefit in a meaningful way.
So, y'all have had access to a number of people go through this program. What excites you the most about what, you know, as you see people come in and as they move out, about what they say about their experience?
I love hearing feedback from participants. I will tell you that on occasion when I'm out in the community, folks will come up to me and share that they participated in the program and will talk about how meaningful it was for them and for their businesses, which ultimately impacts their families. And that really makes my heart smile, I will tell you. Some of the testimonials that we've received from organizations like Flourish Horticulture, where, you know, the owner shared how much the class has helped him to get organized and bring structure to his organization, that warms my heart and just confirms for me that this is a meaningful investment in community in partnership with Delgado. And I definitely want to shout out Delgado and the work that they're doing in workforce development and training. They have developed an incredible curriculum for small business owners, and I'm just really proud of the work that Dr. Studd is doing as chancellor and Dr. Alonda Williams in leading workforce development and training. It is an excellent partnership, and the participants really speak to, I think, the value of how we are joining forces to deliver something really important.
I love the diversity of their offerings, right? I mean, when you have, and especially like you guys, Cox, that is, I mean, you're a technology company for all, you know, all in all different aspects. And there's so many different emerging technologies and the way that we deal with information and how we consume it, how we disseminate it. Things are changing so fast, it's hard for a small business to keep up.
That is exactly right. And so, you know, here at Cox, we definitely are focused on making sure that our community is connected, and that includes small business owners, really business owners of any and all sizes. We want to make sure that we're offering solutions, including affordable solutions, that keep our community, including business owners, connected. And also, we're introducing technology and artificial intelligence capabilities as part of this Small Business Leadership Academy. And we know how important that is for small business owners who need and must find efficient ways to ensure successful operations. So we're excited that that will be a part of our offering this year. And just generally are always focused on making sure that we ensure that all of our community is connected, which means, again, affordable high-speed internet options, which we offer at Cox, and we do support small businesses and all-size businesses, which we, of course, are very excited about.
We're visiting with Sonny LaBeouf, Market Vice President of Cox New Orleans. Sonny, this is going to sound like a crazy question, but I'm just kind of curious. What do you hear from the small business leaders about their fears of the unknown of AI. I mean, you know, it's every time you have these coffee table conversations about AI, and I always find it intriguing how people, you know, articulate the challenges around it and the intricacies about it and the uncertainty of it. And it always comes back to there's a fear there. Do you hear that as well from these folks?
Well, I will tell you that AI is absolutely a hot topic. And I know there are questions, but I'll share with you that long before AI was the talk of the town, Cox has been leveraging our technology in innovative ways for a really long time. And so we're excited to be able to share with small business owners information that will make them more comfortable around how they can use technology, including AI, but certainly not limited to. How can they use technology to ensure efficient operations, to make sure they're maximizing their potential as a business owner? And quite often, small businesses have limited capital, so they have to find innovative ways to deliver for their customers or for the customers that they're seeking, you know, to have support their business. So you're right, there is fear sometimes around AI, but it's about sharing information, and we will use subject matter experts to do that through the offering at the Small Business Leadership Academy, which hopefully will make those participants more comfortable with how they can utilize AI and other technology for their ultimate success.
So if folks have an interest in registering for SAME, how do they go about doing that?
So they can register or via Delgado's website. They can go to www.dcc.edu, and they will find the application there. We hope small business owners who are interested in scaling and growing their businesses will apply. There are limited seats available, so they should apply sooner rather than later, and those applications will be open through August 20th. So again, there's a limited number of spots, so for those who are interested, they should act fast.
So I wanted to ask you also about the James M. Cox Foundation has made a significant donation to support coastal restoration. Tell us about the gift and why this topic is so important.
Well, I will tell you, you know, in my view and in the view of many, this gift is transformational. So the James M. Cox Foundation has donated $2.5 million to Ducks Unlimited. And what excites me most about that gift is that it will directly fund projects that restore wetlands, enhance wildlife habitat. And here's the kicker for us. Here in the greater New Orleans area and surrounding parishes, will create this donation will help to create natural buffers to protect against storm. And we know how important storm mitigation is. We've all lived through Katrina and Ida and other storms. And in fact, I heard on yesterday that in Jefferson Parish, since 20, there have been 70 emergency declarations, and many of them weather-related. So we know how important storm mitigation is, particularly now for this region, you know, that we are doing what we can to ensure that our community is protected.
And this is not the first donation that has been made by the foundation towards this endeavor, right?
That's correct. Not long ago, an earlier $1.1 million grant was also made by the foundation to preserve approximately 20,000 acres of Louisiana wetlands. And the foundation has invested in preserving our wetlands in many other ways, enormous investments, which we in this region will absolutely benefit from. And really, that's throughout the state. So I'm really grateful as a leader here locally for the James M. Cox Foundation making such a significant investment, which will help to protect us from storm impacts. And, you know, it's hurricane season. I don't even like to say the H word, quite frankly, but that's where we are. And I am grateful to know that the James M. Cox Foundation is investing in ways that will protect us and our families and our community.
You know, it's funny. Whenever I have to interview the folks from emergency preparedness from all jurisdictions in the greater New Orleans area, I tell them it's my least favorite interview because that typically means that there's something in the Gulf and it's heading our way. And it's like, you know, I'd rather not talk to any of you folks ever, quite frankly. I'm sure you feel the same.
Yes, that is absolutely right. When we have meetings, because we always want to do everything that we can to mitigate storm impact and be prepared in all ways. But I tell the team, don't say the word, really. Let's prepare, yeah, but let's not say it. But you're right. Exactly. It's the season right now, and it's important that we all are prepared. And again, just grateful to the James M. Cox Foundation for helping this region and this state provide storm mitigation barriers.
So, folks, if you have an interest in joining the Small Business Leadership Academy to be presented by both Cox Communications and Delgado, you can go to www.dcc.edu. And register there. The deadline is the 20th, I think you said, Sonny. Is that correct?
That's correct. August 20th.
August 20th. Sonny LaBeouf, Market Vice President, Cox New Orleans. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the continuation, 6 years of the Small Business Leadership Academy at Delgado Community College. A great collaboration. Thank you so much.
And thank you again for having me.
All righty, folks, we'll be right back with final thoughts with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications at Greater New Orleans, Inc. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications at Greater New Orleans, Inc. Matt, I wanted to talk a little bit about this project that went on in uniting the ports together. It seems as though they've been able to work out a CEA. So tell us about it.
Yeah, the five lower Mississippi River ports have come together to essentially agree that they need to develop a marketing strategy, and that's going to help them grow the train logistics sector. You know, this is a big deal for a lot of reasons. I mean, first and foremost, just the idea that you've got these five entities that, you know, traditionally may have not always necessarily been on the same page, to have them agree that, you know, marketing this entire complex of ports is a good idea, is a welcome sign that this industry can take off when united. Because look, we're the biggest global complex of ports in the entire world. So I think that's the first thing. I think secondly, when you think about what it means for customers, that they're going to look at this as, instead of being, you know, five separate, you know, entities that they've got to learn all about individually, the fact that they're being packaged together as a single unit, it doesn't mean that every customer would use all five port systems, but they could at least understand, okay, well, I have some break bulk needs, but I also have some container needs, but I need some stuff that's upriver and a little bit that's downriver, and you can get all that in one package. It's just cleaner and it's easier, and it means that our dreams of making sure that New Orleans once again becomes one of the premier global port systems will come true. So I've got to tip my hat to the leaders of each of those ports. I actually just want to name them because they deserve the recognition. You know, we've got the Port of New Orleans, Port of South Louisiana, Port of Greater Baton Rouge, St. Bernard Port, and the Louisiana Gateway Port at Plaquemines Parish.
It just makes sense. It puts us in a better position to compete because the competition is truly intense out there, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, really the competition, there is a little bit of competition between each of the ports, but ultimately our real competition are other markets. It's your Mobiles, it's your Charlestons that have really kind of emerged and eaten our lunch over the past couple of decades. And so ultimately, when we're able to present a business case to companies in that sector that we've got everything you need right here, I think that we're unbeatable. You know, being in the middle of the country, so your goods aren't stuck on one coast. This is really appealing, and you know, I said it before. I just hats off to the leaders of each of those ports for recognizing that their firepower is so much stronger when working together.
So, also on another front, the Wise Women wrap up is. I love this. This endeavor. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So WISE Women, the WISE stands for Women in the STEM Economy. This was dreamed up by Daphne Barnes on our team, who has led a lot of our STEM education work within the organization. You know, she recognized 4 years ago that we needed to expose especially young female students to what STEM careers really kind of look like. And so she developed this summer-long program where a handful of students, this year it was 13 of them, are able to, you know, get hands-on mentoring from women who work in STEM fields today. They get to tour facilities like, the Primate Research Center on the North Shore, RNGD, Leviton, Hands-On Construction, Loop NOLA, you name it, Mishu. So they get to see kind of what a workplace looks like in the STEM economy, so that when they're, having to make the decisions of how they continue their educational pathway and what kind of career they want to enter into, they can see it's very feasible. They know what it looks like. Really our goal would be for them to kind of, graduate from the WISE Women program into the innovation internship, which I know we've talked about on air before, so that they, get while they're in school, in higher education, they get to get a little bit of hands-on training within these companies. And then, ultimately when they graduate, then now they have an employer that, is familiar with them. They understand how this world works, because, it's really impressionable age for these young students, and not enough of the right information is making its way to them. And so as a result, that's why, especially in STEM, it's underrepresented by female professionals.
Yeah. And I love that y'all have that continuation opportunity on the back end of it as well, that you just mentioned.
Absolutely. It's essential. I think studies show most people are really only aware of, 12 to 13 career options. And so the more that we're just showing students the possibilities that live outside of those 12 or 13 that they're at the tip of their tongue, police officer, fireman, lawyer, doctor, it's a win for us because we have a lot of jobs that look very different from one another.
No doubt, for sure. As always, Matt, we truly appreciate the time that you guys spend with us. Matt Wohl, VP of Communications at Greater New Orleans, Inc. And if you talk to Michael, tell him it's 72 degrees and nice and no humidity here.
Well, he does have the internet there still, so I don't know how much you'll believe me, but I'll try.
he actually gets on the internet? He can do that?
I think he might have his kids with him.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much, Matt. Have a great week.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Greg Rigamer, demographer and political consultant. He's reading an article in the San Francisco Chronicle about how the Bay Area is getting old fast and what changes come about as a result of an older population. And started thinking about where do we sit here in the greater New Orleans area. We'll be right back with Greg Rigamer.